Graphic Audio. A movie in your mind.
Graphic Audio presents.
Yeah, I reckon we waltzed right into a heap of trouble again.
What's the matter, old timer? Don't you like having a target painted on your back?
William W. Johnstone's Sidewinders.
Yeehaw!
Narrated by Ken Jackson. With performances by Tim Carlin, Mort Shelby, Timothy Lynch, Terrence Aselford, Elizabeth Jernigan, Nanette Savard, Nick DePinto, David Coyne, Alexander Strain, Danny Gavigan, Christopher Graybill, Gregory Gorton, Richard Rowan, Stephen Carpenter, and Johann Detweiler. Sidewinders 5, Deadwood Gulch. Six sturdy mules pulled the wagon along the trail that followed a winding gulch through the Black Hills of the Dakota Territory. Off to the right of the trail flowed a narrow, brawling creek lined by cottonwood, aspen, and box elders. The pine-covered sides of the gulch rose steeply and cast a pall of gloom over the trail despite the sunny day. Winter wasn't far off, and a chill hung in the air. Breath fogged in front of the faces of the driver and the three guards on the wagon. The guards wore sheepskin jackets, while the driver was bundled in an old Mackinaw. The man on the seat next to the driver had a shotgun across his knees. The two guards clutched Winchesters in the back of the wagon with the sacks of gold dust bound for the Stebbins and Post Bank in Deadwood. Deadwood was 4 miles away along this narrow gulch, and lately every foot of the way had been dangerous. There was a time when these runs from the mine to the bank had been made by just two men, a driver and a guard. But with the latest outbreak of lawlessness and violence plaguing the area, the mine owners had increased their precautions. The driver hoped having three tough men along with him would be enough. He wasn't in any mood to die today, and he dang sure didn't want any devil's pitchfork carved into his forehead. His name was Chloride Coleman. He had followed the lure of gold and silver from one end of the frontier to the other for more than 25 years, after first heading for California during the gold rush of 49. Since then, he had been a lot of places, including the rough mining camp of Deadwood when gold seekers first flooded into the Black Hills. He had spent part of the intervening years searching for his own fortune before finally coming to the realization that he wasn't fated to find it. He could make a living, though, working for men who had been more fortunate. Mitch Davis, the guard on the seat beside Chloride, glanced over at him.
Can't you get those jugheads moving a little faster, Chloride?
This here place gives me the fantas.
Hold your horses. Of course, them ain't horses I'm driving, are they?
I feel better when we get to Deadwood.
The speaker was one of the men in the back. He was called Turley. His more taciturn companion was Berkner. Like Mitch Davis and Chloride himself, they had come to the Dakota Territory in search of their fortune, only to find that the big mining concerns had gobbled up the best claims already, squeezing out the individual miners. Davis lifted his shotgun.
I don't like the looks of that deadfall up ahead. I don't think it was there last time we came through here. There might be half dozen of those devils hiding behind it. You better steer around as much as you can, Chloride.
Now how am I gonna do that? The trail goes right beside that big old tree, and the way this side of the gulch comes crowding in, there ain't no way to go except right past it.
Yeah, well, maybe not, but don't waste any time getting by. Better whip up that team a little.
Chloride reached for the whip socketed into a holder next to him. With skill born of long experience, he popped the black snake over the heads of the mules.
Yep, you varmint! Yep!
The stolid mules leaned into their harness and moved a little faster, but not much.
Keep your guns on that deadfall, you two!
Both men lifted their rifles to their shoulders and trained the weapons on the huge log lying a short distance to the left of the trail. Davis was right, Chloride thought. Several of the outlaws who called themselves the Deadwood Devils might be hiding behind it, lying in wait to ambush the wagon carrying the gold shipment. As the wagon started past the deadfall, Davis got up on one knee on the seat so he could fire the shotgun over Chloride's head if he needed to.
But careful with that! I ain't partial to having greeners go off right next to my ear. I'm already deaf enough from old age.
Better deaf than dead. If there are any road agents behind that tree, you'll be glad I've got this shot.
A shot rang out, and Davis toppled over. He fell against Chloride. He rolled off the startled driver and landed on the floorboards at Chloride's booted feet. Turley and Berkner tried to swivel around and return the fire.
Get up there! Move! Move!
Chloride slashed frantically at the backs of the mules, trying to get them to break into a run. Turley and Berkner got several shots off. But then, Berkner slumped back onto the chest that held bags of gold dust and chunks of gold ore. He dropped his rifle and pawed frantically at the wound for a second before his head slumped back and his eyes began to glaze over in death.
Faster!
That left just Turley to fight off the attack, and he was badly outnumbered. Several outlaws burst from the trees on horseback and splashed across the creek to give chase to the wagon, which was bouncing along faster now as Chloride finally got the mules to run. Smoke puffed from the six guns wielded by the men, who had bandanas pulled up over their faces to conceal their identities.
Hold them off, Turley! Get this wagon moving faster!
Turley levered another round into the Winchester's chamber. Both men knew the odds of the wagon team being able to outrun the desperados' horses were mighty slim. The outlaws were closing the gap by the second. Chloride glanced over his shoulder and saw Turley thrashing around as blood poured from his bullet-ripped throat.
Oh, hell!
Turley would be dead in seconds. Davis and Berkner had already crossed the divide, and that left Chloride alone against a horde of bloodthirsty outlaws.
Come on, dang you!
Holding the reins in his left hand, he used his right to fumble the old cap-and-ball revolver from the holster at his waist. He twisted around on the seat and lifted the gun, earing back the hammer. He aimed at the riders thundering along right behind the wagon and pulled the trigger. None of the outlaws even slowed down. Because Chloride was turned around on the seat, he didn't see the sharp bend in the trail coming up as it followed the winding course of the creek. The mules didn't slow down as they raced around the turn. Chloride felt the wagon lurch and sway underneath him. Something in its underpinning gave way. And Chloride suddenly found himself sailing through the air. The wagon overturned behind him. Branches clawed at his face as he landed in a thick clump of brush. The impact knocked the breath out of him. He lay there, unable to move. That probably saved his life, too. Because the outlaw's guns continued to roar, and bullets whipped through the brush all around him and just over his head.
That's enough! Hold your fire, blast it!
But the driver fell off the wagon, landed in that brush.
I saw what happened. He probably broke his neck when he landed. And even if he didn't, you've thrown enough lead in there to turn him into a sieve. Let's go on about our business.
Chloride knew he couldn't stay here. The outlaws might take it into their heads at any second to search the brush and make sure he was dead. Coleman began working his way backward, inching along so he wouldn't cause the branches to wave around and give away his position. It was nerve-wracking, especially because he could hear the killers moving around only a few yards away. His feet bumped against something. Carefully, he turned his head and saw that he had reached a cluster of large rocks at the base of the slope forming the northern wall of the gulch. Chloride crawled among the rocks, confident that they would offer him better shelter. He lay there on his belly for a long moment as his heart pounded furiously in his chest. After a while, he lifted his head. He had lost his battered old hat with the turned-up brim when he went flying off the wagon, so he didn't have to worry about that. He stayed low, edging his head up just enough so he could see part of the trail. The outlaws were moving the gold from the wrecked wagon. They had busted open the chests and were loading the pokes of gold dust into their saddlebags. The sacks of nuggets were slung onto the backs of a couple of pack animals and lashed in place. Chloride didn't see the wagon team. The mules must have broken loose from the wagon when it crashed. They were probably still running toward Deadwood. Those outlaws were crafty varmints, Chloride thought. They had dragged that deadfall up by the trail and then left it there as a distraction for the guards on the wagon, and all the while they were hidden in the trees on the other side of the creek, ready to ambush and hijack the gold shipment. The old-timer counted 8 men, all of them still masked and wearing their hats pulled low. He couldn't see enough of their faces to have even a hope of recognizing them. They went about their business with swift efficiency, and when they had transferred all the gold to their horses and pack animals, one of the men reached under the long duster he wore and drew out a knife. Even in the gulch's gloom, the blade glittered. The bodies of the 3 guards had also spilled out of the wagon when it overturned. They sprawled limply on the trail not far from the wrecked vehicle. In the concealment of the rocks, Chloride watched the man with the knife go over to Turley's body. He hooked the toe of his boot under Turley's shoulder and rolled the corpse onto its back, then knelt beside it. Sunlight flashed on the knife again as the man got to work. And once again, Chloride closed his eyes tightly. He didn't have to watch to know what the man was doing. The tip of that razor-sharp blade would slice through Turley's forehead and cut a vertical line down it. Then, part of the way down that line, 2 more lines would be carved into Turley's skin, curving up on either side of the first wound to form a symbol that looked roughly like a pitchfork. It was the bloody mark of the Deadwood Devils, the calling card of the gang that had descended on the Black Hills. Chloride had seen it before on bodies brought into Deadwood after previous robberies. When the old-timer forced his eyes open, he saw that the outlaw with the knife had finished his grim work. The bodies of the 3 dead guards lay on their backs, their eyes pointed sightlessly toward the sky, and blood seeping from the grotesque markings on their foreheads. The man, who seemed to be in charge, wiped his knife on Mitch Davis's shirt and sheathed the weapon.
What about the driver?
I told you, he's probably dead.
But he might not be. We ought to take a look.
No. He's alive, we'll leave him that way.
But he'll head for Deadwood and tell folks what happened.
They'll find out soon enough. There'll be another wagon or a rider come along this trail before the day is over, more than likely. And it's pretty obvious what happened here, don't you think?
If you say so.
I do say so. It might be better if the driver is still alive. Then he can tell what he saw here, and everybody in Deadwood will be even more afraid of us than they are now. We want everybody in this part of the country to know that if you cross paths with the Deadwood Devils, you're going straight to hell.
After what he had seen today, Chloride Coleman didn't doubt it a bit. Back in the mining town known as Deadwood, 2 Texans, Scratch Morton and Bo Creel, rode along the main street.
Place has changed quite a bit since the last time we were here, Bo.
What'd you expect? Place was just a raw mining camp then. It only been here a couple of months. It's a real town now. Not only that, but I remember hearing something about a big fire they had here a year or so ago, burned down some of the buildings. They've rebuilt since then. The saloon where Bill Hickok was shot isn't even there anymore.
Well, now I recollect we didn't find no gold when we were here before. So what are we doing here now?
Everybody's got to be somewhere.
That was especially true of these 2 wandering sons of the Lone Star State. Best friends for 50 years. Bo and Scratch had met when they were both youngsters. So long ago, Texas had still been part of Mexico, but not for much longer. That was during the middle of the runaway scrape, when Sam Houston's ragtag army and most of the Texican civilians had been fleeing from the inexorable advance of the dictator Santa Anna's forces. An even smaller and more ragtag group of volunteers had delayed the Mexicans by luring them into a siege of an old mission near San Antonio de Bejar. But a lot of scared people believed that was just postponing the inevitable. Of course, it hadn't turned out that way. Houston's men, among them the barely old enough to shave, Bo and Scratch, had won a stunning victory at San Jacinto, and Texas had become an independent republic for 9 years before joining the Union. Although they were still friends, Bo and Scratch had gone their separate ways after that monumental battle and might have lived out their lives like that if sickness hadn't claimed the lives of Bo's wife and their young children several years later. Heartbroken by the loss, Bo had wanted to be anywhere but Texas, and his friend Scratch, who hadn't settled down yet, had been glad to go with him. Somehow or other, they had just kept on drifting ever since then. Through the long decades, they had been almost everywhere west of the Mississippi, had worked at a wide variety of mostly honest jobs, and had managed to stay out of jail, except for every now and then when some lawman got overzealous. Despite the fact that they were now in late middle age, the rugged lives they had led meant both Texans were still vigorous, active men. Bo, who favored a black Stetson, a long black frock coat, and a string tie, reminded some people of a traveling preacher with his solemn face and graying hair. That is, until they caught a glimpse of the well-worn walnut grips of the Colt he wore holstered on his right hip. There was no mistaking Scratch for any sort of sky pilot, not with the gaudy, long-barreled, ivory-handled Remington revolvers he carried in fancy holsters. Scratch's big, cream-colored hat and fringed buckskin jacket gave him the look of a dandy. His hair under the hat was pure silver. Scratch nodded toward a sign on a business building that said, Red Top Cafe.
How we fix for dinero, Bo?
We have a little left from that poker game in Cheyenne.
Enough for a good meal after a long ride?
Yeah, but I thought you wanted to start saving up our pesos so we could try to make it south to someplace warmer before winter sets in.
Well, I did. It's hard on these old bones of mine to spend the cold months this far north, but... Well, I got to thinking. What are the chances we'll really come up with enough money to do that?
I don't know. Can't ever tell. We might find something that would make us some money.
Yeah, and we might starve to death before then, too. So, might as well get us a good meal now and postpone that terrible end.
All right. Reckon we might as well.
They rode over to the hitch rail in front of the cafe and dismounted. A low boardwalk ran in front of the buildings on this side of the street. The Texans stepped up onto it and were about to enter the place.
Blast it! I said I was having a kiss with my piece of pie, and I meant it!
Maybe we ought to find some other place to eat.
I don't think so. Come on.
The Red Top was a neatly kept place with a number of tables covered by checkered tablecloths. To the right was a lunch counter with stools along it. Behind the counter, a pass-through was cut into the wall between the dining room and the kitchen. Also on that wall were a blackboard with the day's menu and prices chalked on it, and a couple of shelves with several pies and cakes sitting on them. A small wood-burning stove behind the counter kept a pot of coffee warm. Another stove squatted in the rear corner of the dining room, giving off enough heat to keep out the chill from the wind blowing outside. Since the hour was getting close to the middle of the day, quite a few of the tables were occupied by men eating lunch. Some of the stools at the counter had been until recently, too, judging by the abandoned plates half full of food and the men Bo saw standing back along the wall. Some of them were still clutching napkins, as if they had just gotten up and hurried out of harm's way. Harm's way was a good description of the man who stood in front of the counter, glaring across it at the woman behind it. He was tall and broad-shouldered, with heavy muscles that bulged the flannel shirt he wore. Dark beard stubble grew on the slab-like jaw he thrust out defiantly. The woman was in her 30s, with work-roughened hands and enough lines in her face to show that life hadn't always treated her kindly. Thick auburn hair was pulled into a bun on the back of her head and pinned into place.
Come on, Sue Beth. It's not gonna hurt you, and you know it. One kiss, that's all I'm asking.
And it's one more kiss than you're gonna get, Reese Bardwell. I will sell you pieces of pie all day long if you want, but my kisses are not for sale, sir.
Hold it right there, amigo.
Are you talking to me, mister?
Well, now you seem to be the only one in the place making a jackass of himself, so I reckon I am.
Mister, you don't have to get mixed up in this. This is between me and my customer.
Not anymore, it ain't. This old rooster wants to horn in and start crowing, he's gonna have to pay the price. You know what happens to an old rooster, mister?
Why don't you tell me?
He gets his neck wrung!
The big man lunged at Scratch. Scratch jerked to the side and lowered a shoulder, causing Bardwell's attempted grab to miss. As he stepped closer to Bardwell, Scratch's right fist whipped up and out in a wicked blow that sank solidly into his opponent's midsection. Unfortunately, Bardwell didn't even seem to feel it. He brought his right fist hammering down on top of Scratch's head, driving him to one knee. Bardwell reached down, grabbed Scratch's buckskin jacket, and hauled him up again. Beau acted before his friend could get hurt too badly. He slipped his Colt from its holster, pointed it at Bardwell, and eared back the hammer. That sound was enough to make Bardwell freeze, with one hand bunched in Scratch's coat and the other drawn back and clenched to deliver another thunderous blow.
Let him go.
Who are you?
His friend. Also, the fellow who's gonna blow your kneecap apart with a 45 slug in about 2 seconds if you don't let go of him and step back.
For a second, Beau thought Bardwell was going to be stubborn enough that he'd have to go through with that threat. But then the hand holding up Scratch opened. And the Texan slumped against the counter. The woman reached across it to take hold of his arm and steady him while he got his feet under himself again.
This was none of your business, but you made it that way. You'd best remember that.
I'm not likely to forget. Have you paid the lady for whatever you ate?
I'm not gonna.
Have you paid the lady?
He doesn't owe me anything.
And I suggest you mosey on out of here, friend.
I ain't your friend.
I can live with that. As long as you leave.
Beau stepped back to cover Bardwell as the giant stomped past him and out of the cafe. Beau moved to the door and watched as Bardwell moved off down Main Street. He didn't pouch his iron until he felt fairly sure Bardwell wasn't coming back. He turned as he slid the gun into leather. Scratch had regained his wits and had his hat in his hands, pushing it back into shape where Bardwell's fist had partially flattened it. One by one, the customers drifted back to the plates of food they had left on the counter.
You didn't have to do that, Beau. I had things under control. I was about to give that big varmint his needin's.
I know that. I just didn't want you to have all the fun by yourself.
That's your idea of fun? If I didn't already know it from your accents, I'd know you were Texans from your sheer knuckleheadedness.
You're welcome. We were glad to step in and help you, ma'am.
You mean stick your interfering noses in where they weren't needed, don't you? I was about to give Reese a face full of hot coffee. He'd have behaved himself after that, I can promise you.
Sorry if we added to the problem, man. We were just trying to help.
Oh, I know that. And I suppose I appreciate it. It's just that this isn't the first time Reese has gotten a mite frisky. He's troublesome at times, but he's not really a bad sort. I've always been able to handle him. I just hope this doesn't make him turn really mean.
Calling Reese Bardwell troublesome at times is being mighty generous, Sue Beth.
And if he's not really mean already, I don't want to be anywhere around when he is.
See, that's what I mean. He's got a bad reputation around here, and some would say it's well-deserved. I expect you want some lunch?
Yes, ma'am. We'd be obliged.
You will be, to the tune of $1 each.
That's a little steep, ain't it?
Deadwood is a mining town. Everything costs a little more here.
And it's worth it, mister. Sue Beth dishes up the best food since Aunt Lou Marchbanks quit the Grand Central and went to work cooking for the crew out at the Father DeSmet mine.
Oh, go on with you, Hal. You're just angling for an extra piece of pie.
But without a kiss? I wouldn't mind, you understand. But I imagine my wife would.
You two sit down. I'll get you some coffee.
As Sue Beth fetched a pair of empty cups, she called through the pass-through to the cook.
I need two more lunches, Charlie.
Beau and Scratch sat down and took off their hats. Things were getting back to normal in the cafe now that the ruckus was over. As Sue Beth poured the coffee, Scratch nodded towards her.
We ain't been properly introduced, ma'am. My name is Scratch Morton, and this here's my friend Beau Creel.
Your mother actually named you Scratch, Mr. Morton?
Well, no, ma'am, but it's been so long since I used my real name that I sort of disremember what it is. Now, I can try to dredge it up if you want.
No, that's all right. And I suppose your name is short for Beauregard.
No, ma'am. It's just plain Beau. B-O. My pa liked the sound of it.
I see. Well, what brings you boys all the way up here to Dakota Territory from Texas?
Oh, we didn't come here straight from Texas.
We were in Colorado for a while, and then we decided to ride on up this way for a while.
We tend to drift around a little, never stay in one place for too long.
Saddle tramps, in other words.
Yeah, call it what you will. Seems to suit us, and it has for a long time.
Yeah, only this time we plumb forgot that you don't head north during the autumn. We're like little birdies. We usually fly south for the winter.
Well, you'll get plenty of winter here if you wait a few weeks. By the way, I'm Susan Elizabeth Pendleton. Sue Beth to my friends. You can call me Mrs. Pendleton.
Oh, you're married?
I was. My husband worked in one of the mines. He was killed by the smoke and poison gas when a fire broke out underground a couple of years ago.
We're mighty sorry to hear that.
We sure are.
Thank you.
I was wondering about something. The name of this place is a Red Top Cafe, but the roof's not red.
It's named after me, not the building. It was my husband Tom's idea.
Well, it's a good one.
The face of a scrawny old-timer appeared at the pass-through, and he pushed a couple of plates across it.
Here's those two lunches, Sue Beth.
Thanks, Charlie.
Sue Beth turned and picked up the meals. She set them in front of Beau and Scratch. The thick slices of ham, the mounds of potatoes, and the biscuits dripping with butter and gravy looked and smelled delicious.
Quick, everyone! The animals got us!
Before they could dig in, though, shouting erupted in the street outside. Beau and Scratch turned to look as one of the men at a table close to the door stood up and opened it so the customers in the cafe could hear better.
It was the devils, I tell you! They got us!
What is it? Trouble at one of the mines?
Sounds to me like preaching. Somebody hollering about the devil.
Well, not just one devil, a whole gang of them. The Deadwood devils must have struck again.
The Deadwood devils? Doesn't sound like a very friendly bunch.
They're not. They're outlaws who have been causing trouble around here for the past few months. They've held up stagecoaches, hijacked gold shipments, and murdered at least a dozen men that I know of.
You sure it's the same bunch doing all that?
We're sure. The devils make sure we know. Anytime they kill somebody, they carve a pitchfork on his forehead.
I've heard of people doing things like that. But it's usually vigilantes who are trying to warn lawbreakers what's going to happen to them.
Same thing in a way. They want to keep folks scared.
Well, it's working.
Sue Beth wiped her hands on her apron again and walked down to the end of the counter. She moved aside a swinging gate there and stepped out.
I want to see what's happened now.
We'll join you.
But your lunches.
They'll keep.
Beau, Scratch, and Sue Beth headed for the door, along with most of the other customers inside the cafe. As they stepped out onto the boardwalk, Beau saw a crowd of people gathering in front of an impressive two-story frame building across the street. A large sign stuck out from the front of the building above the boardwalk. It read Bank, and in smaller letters below that single word, Stebbins, Post and Company. People seemed to be clustered around someone. Through a gap in the crowd, Beau caught a glimpse of a short man with a white beard and a mane of equally snowy hair.
That's Chloride Coleman.
Who's he?
An old-timer who drives for the Argosy Mining Company. I don't see his wagon anywhere on the street, though.
Carries gold shipments, does he?
That's right.
And delivers them to that bank across the street, I'll bet. Reckon he got held up, Beau?
He must have, to cause this much commotion. You want to go see what we can find out?
I'm a mite curious. You reckon you could put our plates on the stove to stay warm, ma'am?
Why do you care about a robbery? It's no business of yours. Sorry, I forgot I was talking to Texans.
We'll be back in a few minutes.
They headed across the street to join the crowd that had formed around the old man on the boardwalk. Chloride Coleman wore faded and patched denim trousers, an equally hard-used flannel shirt, and a buckskin vest. An empty holster sagged on his right hip. He had several bloody scratches on the leathery skin of his face and hands, and had obviously run into some trouble. He was being interrogated by a tall, portly man in a tweed suit who didn't have much hair on top of his head, but a pair of huge mutton-chop whiskers framed his florid cheeks.
And what about the others? What happened to them?
That's what I've been trying to tell you, Mr. Davenport. All three of them are dead. And I come mighty close to saying howdy to St. Peter my own self.
You're certain it was the devils of Deadwood Gulch who attacked you?
Devils of Deadwood Gulch, Deadwood devils, call them whatever you want to. It was that same bunch of murdering skunks, no doubt about it. I've seen them carving pitchforks on Turley, Berkner, and poor old Mitch Davis. The bodies are still out there on the trail along with the wrecked wagon. You can go look for yourself if you want to, Mr. Davenport.
No, I'll leave it to the undertaker and his helpers to collect the bodies. You can't blame me for being a bit puzzled, though, Chloride. As far as I know, you're the first victim of a robbery that the devils have allowed to remain alive.
What? You say I was in on it? That I'm working with them no-good murdering polecats?
No, not at all. As I told you, I'm just puzzled. Why do you think they left you alive?
I done told you. That feller who done the carving, he was like Satan his own self. He wanted me to come here and tell everybody in town what happened. He wants everybody to be scared of that bunch.
Well, I sure as blazes am. It's not safe to travel any of the roads around here anymore.
And how can the mines keep going if they can't get their ore and dust to the bank? If the mines go under, my husband will be out of a job.
People, please, calm down, calm down. The mines aren't going under, and neither are the banks. At least, this one won't, as long as I'm the manager of it.
But if somebody doesn't stop those outlaws...
Someone will stop them, I'm sure of it. The Black Hills aren't as lawless as they were 4 years ago when Deadwood was founded. It's just a matter of time.
Just a matter of time until the devils kill us all.
Davenport motioned for an end to the hubbub, but the noisy crowd ignored him. That lasted until a tall, hawk-faced man in a brown suit and Stetson strode up.
All right. Settle down, you people. There's no need for all this commotion.
Oh, thank God you're here, Sheriff. The gold shipment from the Argosy mine has been stolen.
You look like you've been through the ringer, Chloride. What happened?
Well, we was coming down Deadwood Gulch.
Bo and Scratch listened attentively as Coleman went through the story of the robbery, ending with...
After they rode off, I checked on the guards, hoping one of them might still be alive, but really, I knowed better. When I was sure they was all dead, I hot-footed it for town as fast as these old legs of mine will carry me. I thought maybe I'd find that mule team, but I reckon the dang jugheads wandered off up one of the little side gulches.
I can send a search party to look for them, although the bosses out at the Argosy might want to do that, since technically the mules belong to them. John Tadrick can fetch the bodies in and see to them.
What about the outlaws, Sheriff? Are you going to put together a posse to look for them?
How far out did this happen, Chloride?
About 4 miles, give or take.
In the time it took Chloride to hoof it into town, Davenport, those owl hoots are long gone, I'm afraid. I'll ride out there and see if I can pick up their trail, of course, but I wouldn't hold out much hope of that doing any good.
Blast it, Sheriff! The community's in an uproar, and the very basis of the area's economy is threatened. You have to do something about it!
As I was coming up the street, didn't I hear you assuring these good folks that the Deadwood Devils will be found and stopped? Maybe you should just be patient and let me go on about the business of doing that.
All right. But this situation is becoming intolerable.
Come on down to the office with me, Chloride. I want you to tell me everything you remember about the men who held you up and killed those guards.
Well, I'll try. It ain't gonna amount to much, though. I never got a good look at anybody's face.
Maybe something else will help, like the clothes they wore or the horses they rode.
Coleman looked skeptical, but he allowed the sheriff to lead him away. With the old-timer gone, the crowd started to break up into smaller groups that continued to discuss this latest outrage. Clearly, the citizens of Deadwood were upset and scared. Bo and Scratch crossed the street again to the cafe. The Red Top's customers had gone back inside, and so had its namesake. Sue Beth was behind the counter again. She took the Texans' plates off the stove, put them in front of the Texans, got the coffee pot and warmed up their coffee.
This time you'd better go ahead and eat or I'm liable to be insulted. Is Chloride all right? He's a likable old cuss.
He was just scratched and shaken up.
From the sound of it, though, he came pretty close to crossing the divide.
Did the devils hold up the Argosy gold wagon?
That's right.
Bo gave Sue Beth an abbreviated version of the story Coleman had told the sheriff.
Seemed to me like there were some hard feelings between the sheriff and that banker fella Davenport.
Jerome Davenport knows that if things keep on like they have been, the bank may not be able to stay open. It relies heavily on the gold deposits from the Argosy, the Homestake, the Father de Smet, and the other big mining operations in the area.
Have shipments from all the mines been hit?
Now that the Argosy has lost a shipment too, yes, all the big mines have been hit.
How do the varmints know when gold is being shipped out?
It's not that difficult. With all these hills around, put some men with spyglasses on top of them, keep an eye on the mines. They'd be able to see when wagons were being loaded.
Why don't they try some decoy shipments?
I don't know. Maybe they have. Have you heard anything about that, ma'am?
No, but the mine owners and superintendents don't confide their plans in me. Now, are you going to dig into that food or just flap your gums over it all day?
Oh, we're digging in, ma'am. Don't you worry about that.
Bo and Scratch ate hungrily and enjoyed every bite. Sue Beth's coffee was even better, strong and black, just the way the Texans liked it. When they finally pushed their empty plates and cups away, Bo dug a couple of silver dollars out of his pocket and slid them across the counter to Sue Beth, who came along and scooped the coins up deftly, dropping them in a pocket in her apron.
Thank you. I hope you'll come again.
As long as you're serving up food like that, Miss Pendleton, I reckon you can count on it. How much money do we have left now?
Enough to feed and stable our horses for a few nights.
Well, how about feeding and stabling us? Well,
you may have to make up your mind whether you want them to have something to eat and a place to stay, or if we do.
Whew, that bad, huh?
Yeah, but I may have an idea how to change that.
I hope you ain't planning on us robbing a bank. From the sound of it, there ain't much in there.
No, we're not going to turn outlaw. I had something else in mind.
Bo pointed to a building he had spotted down the street.
What's in there?
The offices of the Argosy Mining Company.
Oh, now wait just a doggone minute. What'd you have in mind?
Maybe the Argosy will offer a reward for anyone who can find those outlaws and recover the gold they lost.
You mean we're going to be bounty hunters? You know, we've tried that before, Bo. It never works out too good.
Always the first time for everything.
Yeah, like getting our fool selves killed. I swear, Bo, sometimes it seems like you're getting even more reckless than I am in your old age. Folks look at you and they think you're the sober, responsible one, but they just don't know.
When Bo and Scratch went into the offices of the Argosy Mining Company, they found themselves in an outer office with a desk in front of a railing and two more desks behind it, along with a couple of doors. A man in a suit and a stiff collar sat at the desk with a number of papers in front of him. He looked up with an impatient glance at the Texans.
Yes, what can I do for you?
Is your boss around?
If you're looking for a job at the mine, you'll have to ride out there and speak to the superintendent. We don't hire any laborers here.
We're not looking to swing a pickaxe, sonny.
Then what is your business with Mr. Nicholson?
He's the owner of the Argosy Mining Company?
He's the president, and he's not accustomed to dealing with the likes of you.
You're kind of a snippy little cuss, ain't you?
Before the clerk could say anything, the door to one of the inner offices behind him opened, and a man stepped out. He stopped short at the sight of Bo and Scratch, and they found themselves staring in surprise at the massive Reese Bardwell, who they had tangled with in the Red Top Cafe.
You two again!
Well, this is an interesting turn of events, ain't it, Bo?
Take it easy. One ruckus a day with a fella ought to be enough.
What are you doing here? Did you follow me?
Mister, you're just about the last hombre we expected to see in here. We're looking for the boss, Nicholson, right?
A man who had come out of the office behind Bardwell stepped around him. Bardwell was so big, Bo and Scratch hadn't seen the other man until now. Dressed in a sober dark suit, he was around 50, with a mild face, thinning gray hair, and deep-set dark eyes.
I'm Lawrence Nicholson.
Yes, sir. If you're the president of the company, you're the man we want to see. It's about that gold shipment of yours that got stolen today.
You two had something to do with that? I might have known it.
Take it easy, Reese. I hardly think these gentlemen would just waltz right in here like this if they had anything to do with the robbery.
That's right. We ain't loco, and we ain't road agents neither.
And why are you here?
We thought you might be offering a reward for tracking down the gang that's been pulling these holdups.
Bounty hunters.
No, not really. We're just a couple of fellas who are down on their luck and short on funds. But we've done quite a bit of tracking in our time. We thought we might have some luck. That would help you out, Mr. Nicholson, and maybe us too.
Only if you could also find the gold that the Argosy lost today. I'm as interested in that as I am in bringing the thieves to justice.
Likely they ain't had a chance to spend any of it yet. If they've been hitting as many shipments as we've heard about, they've probably got a whole passel of loot cached somewhere.
It's the sheriff's job to track down those owl hoots.
Yes, well, Henry Manning hasn't done a very good job of that so far, has he? I've got a good mind to take a chance on these men, Reese. You obviously know them, though, and if you're opposed to the idea, I'll bow to your judgment.
Just who is this big galoot, anyway, for you to be asking his opinion?
I got the impression you are already well acquainted with each other. Reese Bardwell is the chief engineer and superintendent of the Argosy Mine.
What?
I'd be leery of hiring them if I was you, Mr. Nicholson. They jumped me while I was having lunch in Mrs. Pendleton's cafe. That one in the fancy jacket attacked me, and the other one threatened me with a gun.
That's terrible. I'm sorry, gentlemen, but I can't go against the wishes of Mr. Bardwell in this matter. Maybe you can get the sheriff to sign you on as deputies. Sheriff Manning could use some competent help.
You sure?
Sorry.
I reckon we'll be going then.
Hey, but Bo...
Come on, there's nothing for us here.
Ha! That's for damn sure.
Now what?
Now we see if the livery stable owner is willing to let us sleep in the hayloft for a little bit extra, if we keep our horses there.
Luckily for the two Texans, the elderly liveryman was agreeable to the arrangement Beau proposed. For an extra 4 bits a night, the Texans would have a place to sleep, even though they might have to share it with bugs and rats. It wouldn't be the first time. After Scratch and Beau had left their mounts at the stable, they continued down the main street.
We still gotta eat. You reckon Miss Pendleton might let us have a few meals on the cuff?
She might, but I don't want to ask her. I never have liked being beholden to anybody.
Me neither. Do we offer to wash dishes?
It may come to that. Let's not give up just yet, though. There are other mining companies in Deadwood, and some of them have lost gold shipments, too. Maybe one of them would like to hire a couple of trackers.
That's worth a try.
They spent the afternoon going from office to office, but with no luck. Although the reception they got at the other companies wasn't as hostile as the one at the Argosy, no one was willing to hire them to try to track down the Deadwood Devils. That's the sheriff's job, they were told more than once. The Texans were coming out of the office of the Black Hills Bonanza Mining Company when they almost ran into a smaller figure scurrying along the boardwalk. Beau put out a hand to steady the little white-bearded man, who he recognized as Chloride Coleman.
Take it easy there, old-timer.
Who are you calling old-timer? A few more years and your hair will be just as white as mine, mister. His already is.
Hey, my hair's silver. It's not white.
You still ain't that much younger than me, and don't you forget it. Now step aside. I got business to tend to.
With the Black Hills Bonanza?
That's right. I gotta see if they want to hire the best dang gold wagon driver in the whole blasted Dakota Territory.
I thought you worked for the Argosy Mining Company.
Well, not that it's any of your business, mister, but word got back to Mr. Nicholson that rascal Davenport over to the bank was asking questions about how come the devils didn't kill me like they have everybody else they've held up. Must have got him nervous, because he decided they could dispense with my wagon driving services, as he put it.
Well, that's a shame. We're out of work, too, and been trying to hire on with one of the companies to track down those road agents.
None of them hired you, did they?
Not yet. There's one more left, though.
Which one's that?
The Golden Queen.
You don't want to work for that outfit, take my word for it.
Why not?
Well, for one thing, it's about to go under. It's been hit harder than any of the other companies. The fellas who work for the Golden Queen been getting by on promises instead of wages for nigh on to, well, a month now.
Well, maybe what we should do is try to find those outlaws first and then find somebody who's willing to pay us for what we know.
How do we eat in the meantime?
I don't like to say it, but maybe we could ask Mrs. Pendleton for some credit after all.
Sue Beth Pendleton? That there is one handsome woman, let me tell you. Serves up a mighty fine helping of victuals, too. Feisty, though. Mighty feisty. Darn shame about her husband, Tom. He was a good fella.
Yeah, she told us about him getting killed. Something else I was thinking about, Mr. Coleman.
Call me Chloride. Everybody does. And come to think of it, you ain't told me your names.
I'm Scratch Morton. This here's Beau Creel.
Well, pleased to meet you. Now, what was you saying, Beau?
I was just thinking that if we do decide to see if we can pick up the trail of those robbers, it might be helpful if you'd ride with us out to the place where they held you up. You could show us exactly where things happened.
I don't know. I got some bad memories of that place.
Well, they're still memories, ain't they? They ain't happening now.
We could cut you in on whatever reward we got out of it.
Well, I might could do that. If I got time, that is, once I get a new job.
All right. We can find you around town?
Yeah, for a day or two anyway, I expect. Where are you boys staying?
Hanson's Livery.
The penthouse suite.
Bedding down in the loft, eh? Well, I can't say I never did the same. So long!
Chloride went on in the Black Hills Bonanza office, while the Texans headed along the street toward the office of the Golden Queen.
You reckon there's any point in this, if the mine's as bad off as Chloride said?
It might not be as bad as he thinks. Anyway, it won't hurt to go in there and ask.
When they reached the small one-story clapboard building with the simple legend Golden Queen Mining Company painted on its front window, Scratch frowned.
That don't look too promising. This place ain't near as fancy as the Argosy or some of the other mining companies.
Can't always tell by looking.
Beau was somewhat surprised to see a young woman sitting at a desk, writing in a ledger. Blonde curls fell loosely around her shoulders. She had a mighty attractive face, with a faintly exotic cast to it, highlighted by a small beauty mark on her cheek near the right corner of her mouth.
Yes?
Pardon me, miss, but we're looking for whoever's in charge of the Golden Queen Mining Company.
That would be me. I am the Golden Queen Mining Company.
You own the company?
That's right. I'm Martha Sutton. What can I do for you?
Well, beg your pardon, miss, but we weren't expecting...
Weren't expecting to find a girl in charge of a mining company? You're not the only ones. Some other people in this town seem to have a problem with that, too. That's just too bad.
Well, I never said we had a problem with it. It's just a little surprising, that's all. My name's Beau Creel, and this is my friend Scratch Morton.
Pleased to meet you, ma'am.
Mr. Creel, Mr. Morton, I ask again, what can I do for you?
Well, we're new in town, and we've been hearing about the Deadwood Devils and how they've been holding up gold shipments from the mines around here. Has that happened to your outfit?
Not that it's any of your business, Mr. Creel, but yes, the Golden Queen has been robbed. Several times, in fact. The Devils have hit us probably more than any other mining operations around here.
Us?
My father founded the Golden Queen and ran it until about a month ago. That was when he died, suddenly. His heart gave out, the doctor said, possibly from worrying about the holdups.
Well, we're sorry to hear that. That'll happen sometimes when you got a bum ticker.
At any rate, that's why I'm running the company now. Our shipments have been hijacked several times since then, to the point that no one wants to drive for me anymore or hire on as guards because the others have been killed. The company is on the verge of collapse. Is that what you wanted to know?
You got us wrong, Miss Sutton. We'd like to help you.
How are you going to do that?
Well, if somebody could track down the Deadwood Devils and maybe even find all the loot they've stolen, I imagine it would make things look a lot more promising for the Golden Queen, wouldn't it?
If you're angling for me to hire you and your friend as some sort of troubleshooters, Mr. Creel, I can't afford it. Right now, I can't even pay the men working in the mine. I owe them a month's back wages, and it's all I can do to continue feeding them.
If we were able to recover some of the gold you lost, how would you feel about cutting us in for a share?
We could probably come to an arrangement like that. 10% of the value of whatever gold you recover.
I was thinking more along the lines of 20%.
10's all I can afford.
Well, in that case, ma'am, you got a deal.
Martha stood up and came out from behind the desk, extending her hand to each of them in turn.
I probably should have asked you what your qualifications are to be hunting down gold thieves. Are you lawmen of some sort?
Well, we've worked as deputies before, done some scouting for the army as well, so we have experience with tracking.
Plus, we've wound up in quite a few ruckuses with owl hoots that were none of our doing. We don't never go looking for trouble, but sometimes it seems like it looks for us.
Well, if you find the Deadwood Devils, you can count on one thing. You'll find plenty of trouble, too. When are you going to start searching for them?
It's too late in the day to pick up a trail today. First thing in the morning, we'll ride out to the place where the Argosy gold wagon was held up today and see what we can find.
Ha! The Argosy, huh?
You and the folks at the Argosy don't get along?
That's none of your business, Mr. Creel. You don't have to concern yourself with anything except finding the devils and getting back as much of my gold as you can.
You're right, ma'am, we don't. Come on, Scratch.
They left Martha Sutton in the office and walked along the street.
That's a pretty gal, but she's a mite prickly around the edges.
I'd say she has a reason to be. As much trouble as she's had. First those gold holdups and then her pa dying, maybe because of them. Meanwhile, we gotta eat tonight. I reckon I got just enough money hidden away in my saddlebags to buy some meal at the Red Top.
What? You mean you've been squirreling away dinero without telling me?
And it's a good thing, too. Otherwise, we'd be going hungry tonight.
The fried steaks Sue Beth Pendleton and her cook Charlie dished up at the cafe were just as good as the ham at lunch had been. As the Texans were cleaning their plates and washing down the last of the food with coffee, Sue Beth paused on the other side of the counter.
I figured you boys would be back.
Well, with food this good, where else in town would we eat?
And I figured you might ask me for credit. No offense, but you look a little down at the heels.
We don't much believe in credit. We like to pay for what we get as we go along.
If more people were like you, the world would probably be better off.
Yeah, well, we are running a mite short, though, but we got some work lined up that ought to help out.
Well, if you wind up needing a hand, you can always get a meal here. I don't believe in turning away a hungry man.
It won't come to that. We'll be fine.
Yeah, we've been making it for 40 years now, so I reckon we'll get by a mite longer.
I'm sure you will.
But remember what I said. You remind me a little of my father, Mr. Morton. I couldn't let you starve.
Well, thanks.
When the Texans left the cafe a short time later, Beau was smiling. He waited until they were outside and the door was closed behind them before he spoke up.
Well, that's the first time in a while I've seen you struck speechless.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Look on your face when Ms. Pendleton told you that you reminded her of her old pa. That was just priceless.
She was paying me a compliment.
And telling you that you're really old.
Same age as you.
Difference is, I'm not denying it.
Dang it. Let's just go to the livery stable, check on our horses, and turn in.
Sounds like a good idea to me.
When they got back to Hansen's livery, though, they found someone waiting for them. Chloride Coleman was talking to a stocky Mexican who had taken over as the hostler on the night shift. Chloride raised a gnarled hand in greeting as he saw the Texans approaching.
Well, I figured you fellas would show up here sooner or later since you said you were staying here. I need to have a few words with you.
Yeah, go ahead and palaver.
Talking always goes better with a mite of lubrication, if you get my drift.
If you want whiskey, you'll have to provide your own. We can't afford it.
You know what we was talking about earlier?
Which part?
The part about me helping you fellas track down the Deadwood Devils. You still interested in that?
Maybe. But I thought you were going to be too busy with your new job to give us a hand.
Well, as it turns out, there ain't any openings for drivers right now. So I got more time than I figured I would.
Well, we'd be pleased to have you ride out there with us in the morning, Chloride. You can help us take a look around, point out exactly where everything happened. But you know we can't pay you.
You could maybe cut me in on whatever reward you make out of the deal, though, couldn't you?
Scratch?
Yeah, sure.
That's assuming we even make anything.
Sure, I understand that.
Do you have a horse?
I got a mule. Ain't very comfortable for riding, but it'll go all day.
Is it here at delivery?
No, I got a little shack up the gulch a ways. Some prospector must have had a claim there back in the old days, but he didn't find no color and abandoned the place. Say, you boys can stay there if you want and save a little money. You'd have to spread your bedrolls on the floor, but I wouldn't charge you nothing.
Oh, now that sounds like a good idea.
Scratch turned to the hostler.
What's your name, amigo?
Esteban Gonzalez, senor.
Well, Esteban, tell your boss we won't be needing to stay here after all, and we'll be taking our horses with us.
He can take out for the feed he's already given them, but we'll expect the rest of our money back when we come by here in the morning.
I don't know, senores. Once Senor Hansen has money in his pocket, he's always very reluctant to come out again.
Just tell him what we said. We'll be by early.
Si, senor. I will tell him.
Bo and Scratch saddled their mounts and led them out of their stalls.
You can ride double with me, Chloride.
Bo swung up into the saddle and helped the old-timer climb on behind him. They rode out of Deadwood with Chloride giving them directions. Despite the town's facade of respectability during the day, at night it was obvious that this was still a mining town. The saloons were all busy as the Texans and their elderly companion rode past. As they started up the gulch along Deadwood Creek, Beau had an inspiration.
I got an idea where you might be able to get a job as a driver, Chloride.
Where's that? I tried everybody in town.
What about the Golden Queen?
Except that. That's a hoodoo outfit, boys. Bad luck all around.
Why you say that?
Their wagons have been held up more than any of the other mines. And besides, it's run by a gal. Women is bad luck. You've been around long enough, you ought to know that.
The only reason Miss Sutton's running the company is because her father died.
Well, that proves my point right there, don't it? Old Mike Sutton just up and dropped dead one day. If that ain't a hoodoo, I don't know what is.
Anything suspicious about his death?
Suspicious? Well, not that I ever heard anything about. Sutton was just walking along the street one day when he stopped and sort of grabbed his chest. He staggered along a couple more steps and then fell flat on his face. Doc said he was probably dead when he hit the boardwalk. Heart gave out.
Yes, that's what Miss Sutton told us. Do you know where he'd been just before that happened?
Oh, down at the bank, if I recollect right. I think folks said he'd been talking to Jerome Davenport about extending him some money. The devils had already hit a couple of his shipments, and he was already having trouble paying the fellas who worked for him.
Davenport turned him down?
Davenport ain't got to worry about his heart ever giving out. He ain't got one. I think there's a poke full of gold dust where it's supposed to be.
You know, it sounds like you ain't overly fond of him.
The varmint said he didn't suspect me of working with the devils, but he sure made it sound like that's what he really thought.
There's one really good way for you to prove that's not true. Help us catch them, and everybody in town will know you're not crooked, Chloride.
Well, yeah, that's a pretty good idea, all right. Providing that we don't get ourselves shot full of holes doing it.
The old abandoned shack that Chloride had moved into was one step above a rat hole, but it wasn't a very big step. The walls were a shaky combination of scrap lumber, tin, and tar paper. The cold wind penetrated through a number of cracks and gaps. But the roof was still fairly sturdy, Chloride claimed, and he hadn't fallen through the floor yet. He had a small stove for heat, an old barrel that served as a table and had a candle on it, and a narrow bunk. A rickety shed attached to the side of the shack provided shelter for the Texan's horses and Chloride's mule.
See? All the comforts of home.
Oh, yeah. Bo and me woke up in a hog pen a while back, so this is better. I guess.
They spread their bedrolls on the floor and went to sleep, since there was nothing else to do. It was a chilly night, a promise of much colder ones to come, but the Texans were fairly warm in their blankets. During their 4 decades of drifting, they had spent plenty of nights in places more uncomfortable than this one. Despite that, they were both glad to get up the next morning and start moving around again. Stiff muscles protested at first, but soon loosened up. Chloride had some coffee and a few stale biscuits. It wasn't much in the way of breakfast, but he was happy to share with the Texans. After they had eaten, they saddled their horses, and Chloride lifted an old saddle onto the bony back of his mule. On this cold, clear morning, smoke rose from dozens of chimneys in Deadwood, about half a mile down the gulch from the shack. They would have to come back this way when they set out to pick up the trail of the Deadwood Devils at the site of the latest robbery, but Bo and Scratch wanted to see about getting some of their money back from the livery owner. As Esteban Gonzalez had predicted, Hansen was reluctant to turn loose any of the money he had collected from the Texans the day before.
When you make arrangements for accommodations, you're sort of bound by them. You wouldn't have wanted me to give your money back last night and tell you couldn't stay here after all, or your horses either.
Well, we'd understand if there was a good reason.
And we said you could take out whatever we owe for the grain you gave our horses, so you won't be losing any money on the deal.
Now I'll take out for feed and one night's lodging for the horses, since it was so late when you picked them up. That's fair, ain't it?
Fine.
When the Texans had settled with the liveryman, they and Chloride rode out of town the same way they had ridden in, heading west along the gulch where Deadwood Creek flowed. The three riders passed by Chloride's shack and continued on up the gulch. The old-timer pointed out some small mining claims that were still being worked.
Most of the color's done gone from down here. The big mines are farther up. That's why it's a pretty good run into town when they want to bring their gold in. Lots of places betwixt here and there where the devils can hide to ambush the shipments.
Why don't the mines cooperate and go in together on the shipments? They could assemble a little wagon train and hire a couple dozen guards.
Yeah, that might work, but it'd mean they'd have to get along, and they don't. Mine has been such a cutthroat business around here for so long, none of the owners trust each other. So they're trying to go it alone as long as they can.
There's an old saying about cutting off your nose to spite your face.
Don't I know it? But that's the way it is in these parts.
So far, during the ride, they hadn't met any wagons or even anyone on horseback. They could see smoke from chimneys and hear work going on at some of the claims they passed, but the trail seemed to be deserted.
How come we ain't seeing anyone else around these parts?
Folks are scared to ride out here. The devils have killed more than a dozen men so far. Nobody wants to be next.
Yes, but have they ever jumped any solitary travelers? Or do they just rob stagecoaches and gold wagons?
Well, as far as I know, they've only gone after the coaches and the wagons. But maybe any lone pilgrims they massacred just ain't never been found. There are plenty of places in these hills where a body could disappear for good.
They've never tried to hide their other victims, have they?
Nope.
Seems to me like they want folks to find the poor varmints who run afoul of them. Otherwise, what's the point of carving pitchforks in their foreheads?
Well, maybe so. I don't know how some bunch of dang desperados thinks, because I ain't one of them. All I know is that folks are mighty leery about riding this trail these days because they don't want to wind up sporting one of those bloody pitchforks.
Take it easy. We believe your story about the robbery, remember? That's why we asked you to come with us. And you agreed to it. Aren't you worried about riding this trail, Chloride?
Oh, it'll take more than them devils to scare me off. I've seen and done plenty of things in my life, boys, and I ain't afraid to die.
Yeah, neither am I, but I wouldn't mind postponing it as long as I can.
Well, that's just common sense. We're coming to the spot where those masked Ranahans jumped the wagon yesterday. See? The way somebody dragged that deadfall close to the trail up yonder? That's why the guards and I worried the devils might be hidden behind it. But they were lurking over there instead, in the trees on the other side of the creek. Mighty clever of them.
Where'd the wagon turn over?
Right there. You can see some of the scrape marks in the dirt.
Where'd you land when you got thrown out?
Well, in them bushes there, to the left of the trail.
Let's take a closer look.
Bo reined his horse to a halt. After all three men had dismounted, Scratch handed his reins to Bo, then hunkered on his heels and closely studied the ground all around the spot where the wagon had crashed.
If this is where the wagon turned over, this is where the devils unloaded the gold from it as well, isn't it?
Yeah, that's right. I seen most of it from where I was hiding there in the brush.
The Undertaker brought his wagon and helpers out here. They all tramped around a heap. Same for whoever came after the gold wagon. There are too many tracks of men and horses, both, Bo. I can't make no sense of them.
What were you hoping to find?
Some distinctive prints. Maybe one of the devils was riding a horse with a shoe that had been nicked up, so he'd recognize it if we saw it again. Same thing might be true of a man's boot print. But in this case, there are too many tracks for that to do us any good. We don't have any way of knowing who they belong to.
Maybe we ought to ride over to those trees where the bushwhackers hid. Might be something over there worth finding.
That's a good idea, but hang on a minute first.
Chloride scurried off into the brush where he had landed the day before, according to his story.
You seen a man about a dog in there, old timer? We ain't got all day, you know.
No, dagnabbit. Just wait a minute, will you?
Bo and Scratch stood there in the trail, holding their horses' reins, as they listened to Chloride rustling around in the bushes.
I might find them.
Find what?
Chloride emerged from the brush carrying an old revolver in one hand and an even more ancient hat in the other.
I lost my hat and my gun when I got tossed off the wagon. I was so shook up after watching what that boss devil did to those poor dead fellas, I didn't think to look for them before I lit a shuck for town. That's one reason I agreed to come along with you boys today. I wanted to see if they were still here somewheres.
Chloride checked the action on the cap and ball revolver and slid it into the empty holster he wore. Then he punched the old hat into shape, although to the Texans it seemed about as shapeless as before, and settled it on his head.
Yeah, that's better. I was feeling plumb naked without my hat and my gun.
That's something nobody wants to see. Come on.